Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions looked a little sluggish, a little lethargic for about the first 56 minutes on Sunday, and then came a 17-point barrage most of us will not forget, as the Lions downed the Bears 31-26 at Ford Field on Sunday afternoon. And this week's one of the best weeks on our calendar, as the Lions will be taking on the Packers on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it was a game to get your heart palpitations going. I thought they had some moments in the first half, but yeah, overall they struggled for sure, and then made it exciting down the stretch and found yet another way to win a ball game. They've found multiple ways to win different games this season, and I think that's going to be good for them. You know, the this is a young team who, you know, doesn't have a lot of experience in the postseason, while they have guys that have been there, obviously. But overall, they don't have a ton of experience in like those high tension situations, and yet they've had all kinds of different scenarios thrown at them this year, including this comeback win. And then they've been in prime time a bunch too, and they've shown up on all of the prime time games that they've been on over the last, what, 20 games, right? So I think it's all good growing experience. And in the end, I think the Lions will be better for it, even though it was a game that was, it was tough for a long time to watch for a long time.
Right. And after that win on Sunday, Lions are 16-4 in their last 20 games. We'll get to the Bears game in a few minutes here. Let's get into our normal routine here and start with the injury report. Nothing but walkthroughs this week with the short break between games from Sunday to Thursday. First off, Jonah Jackson, ankle and wrist injuries, did not practice Monday or Tuesday.
So he came in with an ankle and a wrist, and eventually, I don't, I think it was Monday, they took the ankle off. So that's a positive, right? So he had both those injuries. Now he's down to one, but he's still not practicing. And so the prognosis, I guess, for him is not good, right? Especially because these are estimates. And if they're estimating he wouldn't have been able to practice with just a wrist injury, then he's going to probably miss this game, which means they're going to probably turn back to Kobe Soersdal in order to get the start again. It would probably be a second one. I know, like, Auschika has started at left tackle twice this season,
Left
but
guard.
the I'm sorry, left guard, thank you. But the fact that they turned to Kolby this week, despite Auschika's two previous starts, I think is an indicator that Colby's, found his way higher up on the depth chart, and he's probably going to be the guy if they need him again, which it, like I said, certainly looks like it.
Center Frank Ragnow, toe and back injury, full practice Monday and Tuesday.
So similar thing, right? Came in with two injuries. That's also been reduced. And so he has been practicing though, like both estimated he would have been able to practice in full. Again, this is pretty par for the course with him. I don't think it's going to be any, concerns. I think he's going to be starting and his typical, normal aggressive self. I think he is currently PFF's number one highest graded center. So, I don't think that toe injury is really holding him back much.
Defensive tackle Isaiah Bugs illness, full practice Monday and Tuesday.
So we don't really know what the illness was. We know that it kept him out of practice all last week, and then he returned and was estimated to have been part of the team this week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Very possible he gets a questionable designation because the injury could be something that's lingering. And if that happens, it could be potentially like that we see Quentin Bohanna again. But if he gets no injury designation, there's a good chance that he plays. And again, without knowing what the illness is, it's not something that we can really speculate on. We just know that he's been estimated to have been practicing in full all week.
Quentin Bohanna had a big tackle for loss late in the game on Sunday. That wouldn't be surprised to see him back out there again. Defensive back, Ife Melifonwu, hand injury, full practice Monday, Tuesday.
So I don't know if it was hard to tell, but he was playing with a club on his left hand. It was black, right? So it was like it was hard to identify. When I was watching the game live, I couldn't see it. It wasn't until my rewatch that I was able to kind of see it. The fact that he only played special teams, I think, hindered that as well. But he played with a club on his hand and was, didn't seem to be any real limitation to that. He wasn't needed on defense, so it's hard to speak to if that was because of the club or just because of, normal circumstances with three other guys ahead of him on the depth chart. So estimated full practices in week this week again, and he's probably going to be either questionable again because with the club, or he'll get the non-injury designation. And either way, there's a good chance that he plays, good chance he contributes on special teams again. But like I said, not sure if the injury is keeping him from being able to play defense or if that's just what the circumstances called for.
So even with the short week, the Lions do not have a long injury report. That's all they have for going into Thursday. So let's talk a little bit more about the Bears game. Biggest thing for the Lions was Jared Goff. Poor game. Maybe his worst game as a Lion. Turned the ball over four times, three of them interceptions. They found a way to overcome it, and he was great, to say the least, in the last two drives.
Yeah, it was. I think he's probably had worse games over the first like year and a half.
Three and third. Yeah. No.
Yeah. But it was definitely the worst game in a long time, right? Like, I would argue that he might have the first like three quarters were probably worse than he played in Baltimore. And he didn't play very well in Baltimore at that, but at least in Baltimore, he wasn't throwing the ball to the other team quite often, right? So he struggles through the first three quarters. And then by the time you get to the fourth quarter, he threw for 120 yards and he leads them on those two late drives that they needed, gets them set up in the 2-point conversion. And so he came through when they needed him. Right. And that's important because what we knew going into this game was if the defense struggles, but the offense is good, the team has a chance to win. If the offense struggles, but the defense is good, the team has a chance to win. But the defense was struggling at times and Goff was struggling the whole time. And so that looked really scary. And then they both of them improved and both managed to come together at the end of the game and they found a way to overcome. And so I think, again, this is a good learning lesson that even when major obstacles and major players on your team are struggling, the team can still find a way to overcome. And that's what ended up happening late in that fourth quarter.
You know, when the score was 26-14 and, watching the game and it's not looking good at that point, you start thinking like, well, at least they kept it somewhat close with turning the ball over four times.
Right.
You know, like this game could have been a lot worse than, it has been, it's a testament to be able to keep that score close, to keep the game from getting out of hand so they can make a wild comeback and finish at the end. Moving on to the running backs. Doesn't matter who they're playing, they're going to be able to create. It's been, 3 weeks with both Gibbs and Montgomery together, and they've been a pretty unstoppable pair.
Yeah, this week it was Montgomery getting 76 yards on the ground and another 22 through the air. And then Gibbs gets 36 on the ground and then 59 through the air. And so like, these guys are they're putting up big numbers in both the passing and rushing game, and it's every week, right? It's the past 2 weeks we've seen it when they're both at their peak. Like if we look back to like the last time the Lions played the Packers, it wasn't like that, right? Like Montgomery had 120 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns, and Gibbs had like 40, right? And so we've now seen this growth of Gibbs, yet Montgomery hasn't like scaled back because Gibbs has grown. It's they found a way to you know mesh them both together, and so now you have two backs that are both producing at high levels, and that is a huge benefit for the team moving forward.
Were they helped by when Montgomery got injured? You know, they were kind of forced to use Gibbs, and
sure.
It turns into like, oh, this is how we're going to use them. And then when Montgomery comes back, they found a way to, you know, stitch them together. Whereas, you know, early on in the year with Montgomery being the veteran, they know what he's bringing to the table. And that's why they kind of stuck with him. And Gibbs kind of wallows around there and leaves us questioning like, oh, this guy was really good in the preseason. Like what's going on now? You'd think Ben Johnson be able to figure out a way to get him involved in the attack. And I guess it just took a few weeks for them to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, I think once Montgomery went down, I agree with you. I they kind of took the training wheels off and said, all right, let's see what this kid has and see what we can do with him. And sure enough, he cuts it loose. You know, he puts up good yardage against Baltimore. He cuts it loose the next week against the Raiders. And then he has not slowed. So it's a nice blend. And when you add the two of them together, combined with what you can do in the passing game, it's a lot of fun to watch, and it's exactly the type of offense that the Lions want.
Speaking of exactly the offense the Lions want, it's regular old performance out of Amon-Ra St. Brown, 8 catches, 77 yards, touchdown.
Yeah.
Jameson Williams, just when, you know, he's kind of disappeared for most of the game, makes the huge touchdown reception, the first touchdown in the comeback.
Yeah,
that Mark Sklareth, you're in the building, but you have rewatched this. Did you watch when he brings up, like, "Where's Sam Laporta?" And then he starts making like immediately after he says it, he makes the 3 catches, and you know each one were huge on that drive. And
yeah,
wide receivers and tight ends, they brought what they always bring every week. Mm-hmm. They weren't an issue, you know, because it was Goff getting them the ball that was the issue. And one of the interceptions was tipped, but the other two were just very poor decisions. The offensive line was good, definitely not their best performance. You know, they had some struggles earlier on in the game, but you know, nothing to complain about when you get down to the last two drives of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I do think J-Mo is starting to come into his own, and they're starting to figure out how to use him a little bit, you know, in a more specific role. They're designing things for him, like that play where he scored the touchdown. Like that was J-Mo was the read, like he was the first read,
right?
And I mean, to the point where Amon-Ra even said, if they come out in this look, you're gold. Like it's going to come to you, and you're going to score. Like Amon-Ra knew it from the way it was designed. And so Amon-Ra runs his under, which pulls the corner down, and then J-Mo just has to beat the safety. And this is becoming a regular thing, right? On all of his big touchdown catches, is he's basically busting through a zone and getting one-on-one with the safety. And then there's no way there's a safety in the league that can run with him. And so That's a scenario that I think the Lions are going to try and exploit a little bit more moving forward. It would work this week too. And so I would cut J-Mo loose again this week and try and continue to build his confidence, because I think if he starts peaking down the stretch here, it's really just going to open things up even more.
On the defensive side of the ball, Justin Fields had one of his better games as a Bear. Lions are still showing issues with, you know, mobile quarterbacks. You know, he's an exceptionally mobile quarterback, but any quarterback that could kind of move Fields had 104 yards on the ground, 169 in the air. It felt like a lot more than that, but you know, that was just that whole demoralizing build up to like, they're going to blow this game to this crappy, you know, this crappy Bears team. And, but you know, it could have been worse. You know, he does his little dance and he gets it out, and then things fall apart for him from there.
Right. And,
you know, but this is a concern for us going forward, for, you know, for the Lions going forward when they face a quarterback that can move a little bit.
Yeah. So there were designed runs on the first like two drives, and those designed runs were successful. And then the Bears moved away from that. And when they moved away from the designed runs, they didn't have as much success on the ground.
Which was weird that they abandoned
moved
it.
Away from. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's once they got out of the scripted plays, it was like they forgot to go back to him. Like they were running him on first down and he was getting 5 yards minimum and putting them in second and easy, right? Second and short. And so it was a great game plan. And if you can run the ball on first down and get 5+ yards, do that every single time. Like that's how you're going to win games. And that's why they were moving the ball down the field. And they went away from it. And when they went away from it, it could have been because of the way that the Lions adjusted. Lions went from their standard 4-man front to a 5-man front. They were playing a little bit less nickel, a little bit more of 3 down linemen plus their 2 edge guys. And they were trying to force the outside contain on that, right? And when they did that, it slowed down. And I think the Bears tried to adjust off of what the Lions were doing, and they moved away with what was working. I would have tested it. If I was the Bears, I would have kept testing that, see if the Lions could have stopped those designed runs, but they moved away from it. And most of the yardage that they gained was on broken plays where Fields scrambles and then gets the yardage. And so the contain approach, it worked well against the run. Even, I mean, it's weird to say that when you look at the fact that Fields alone had 100 yards, but the contain approach did what it needs to do against the running backs. And, it kind of, when they went bigger, it forced the offensive coordinator to think about it. And then he started getting, you know, outthinking himself, I guess. And so, smart adjustment by Aaron Glenn, not something that we've, seen him do a lot in previous games, making those adjustments on the fly, but he was able to do it in pretty quickly in this game. And I think it ended up being a big catalyst in that defense being able to start, you know, getting stops. I wish they'd stop taking penalties on third down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that really killed them.
The soul. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, like if you don't take, there were like 3 or 4 of those drives that were, or, you know, extended by third down penalties. If those go away, this game maybe doesn't have to come down to 4 minutes, right? Like maybe this is close. And so the defense showed improvement, but there's still flaws and properly dealing with mobile quarterbacks is a flaw. Taking penalties on third down is a flaw, and they got to get those corrected. If they're going to play better teams, maybe not this week, but down the stretch, they will play some better teams.
In the playoffs, they certainly will.
Exactly. And so it's okay to, you know, show up against the Bears and play, you know, your D plus level game or C minus level game and you can still get the win. That's not going to happen with some of the other teams that they'll face.
Those third down penalties were so big that, you know, you're sitting there watching the game like, man, they're killing themselves with the penalty. How many penalties, how much yardage have they given up in penalties? Yeah. And that's when they'd flash at that time. I'm thinking it to myself, they flashed up 4 for 20 and I go, oh, that's not a lot. They finished 5 for 25 in the game. So it's they didn't accrue that much penalty yards, but they just came at the worst times.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was just the timing of them was terrible.
Defensively, you know, the Bears kept the ball for 40 minutes. Lions only had the ball for 19. Like, you know, I don't know. That's kind of a function of the offense too, because they kept turning the ball over, and a lot of it, you pointed out, you know, a lot of it's Fields.
Yeah.
They were able to lengthen drives because of those design runs and everything.
Yeah.
You talked about stopping the run. The importance, they still gave up 183 yards on the ground. You hit on another point, like the question marks for this team are now, I think they're more crystal clear than ever. I don't think we really learned anything from this game, you know, it kind of really exposed the issues that still remain. This is a much better team than, you know, than it was 20 games ago, but there, you know, there's still issues and we're seeing them. They really bubbled to the surface here this on Sunday.
The trick is, again, identifying what they are, trying to make moves to correct them, because you have seven more games to work on that, right? And so over those seven games, you have to shore up some of those errors. And at the same time, you're gaining valuable experience on how to win. And so hopefully they're not, I don't think they're peaking. Like, I don't think they have peaked. I don't think they are at their peak. I think they are still learning. They're still figuring it out. And I think the best is still yet to come from this team. And so it was a bad loss, or I'm sorry, it was a bad game, but it wasn't a loss, right? Right. It was. I mean, it was a Freudian bad game split. And so the win at the end of the day, it's a win. And it's a game they would have lost 100 times out of 100 in the past, right?
The way the Bears handled the game is how, like, the Lions used to handle games.
Yes, know? Yes. And very, very passive, trying not to lose, running the ball, and when everyone knows you're going to run it, hand it off to the running back and run it, and then throw the ball 40 yards down the field to try and get a third down.
Although part of me would say, like, did you really think they were going to do that? Like, after the fact, I didn't. That was so dumb. It's like run the ball into the middle of the line, run the ball in the middle of the line. Oh, 3rd and 10, throw a 50-yard bomb. We only need 10 yards, let's throw a 50-yard bomb. Like, it was colossally stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, the Lions did everything they had to do right, and they waited for the Bears to make a mistake, and they did big time. And I thought, like, part of me thought Eberflus, or at least Getsy, needed to be fired after that game, just the way they mismanaged it at the end, you know. Well, and that, I know the Lions are a better team than the Bears, you know, so how terrible is it for the Bears? You know, they lost to, you know, a team that's better than them, but they didn't have to. That I mean, they really gift wrapped it for the Lions, which never happens for the Lions. But like, with that three and out from the second from the last touchdown drive, oh man,
I tell you,
disaster.
They're kind of in an interesting spot, because one, I think you nailed it. I don't think the coaching staff is good enough to win. Right. I think their roster is a developing, talented roster.
Yeah. No, they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of draft capital coming.
Correct. And now they still have holes. They still have some big holes, and they have a lot of draft capital to fill that. The trick will be, do they think they need to start over? And if they do think they need to start over with their coaching staff, well, you may set your development back a couple of years. And then if you're just firing your OC, is that going to be enough to make the corrections that you want? Or if you don't fire him, are you just, you know, treading water with the staff that maybe isn't good enough? And so they're going to have to make some interesting decisions on offense this offseason. Is Justin Fields their answer at quarterback? Is Getsy their play caller? I wonder if they can even stick with their head coach. Like, I wonder if Eberflus is long for that roster, that team as well. And if he's not, then you've got to get the right guy. And do you trust the GM to hire the right guy? You know what I mean? Like, it's a tricky spot, and they'll have a chance. They'll have a chance to make some improvements. The question is, will they? And if they do make changes, will they be the right ones? And so that's where it comes. Like, we've seen, look, we've seen this story. We've seen this story over and over and over again, where they haven't made the call when they needed to, or they made the call and it was the wrong call, like to switch a coach, right? And they've hired the wrong coach. We've seen that happen over and over and over. And it, and even though you have a talented team, if the coaching staff isn't right, you might not go anywhere. And I wonder if the Bears, if I guess kind of where I see the Bears, right? Like, if they go out and they're like, hey, let's get the next Dan Campbell, they're going to be, they're going to be trouble. But if they go out,
hire Ben Johnson.
But if, geez, that, I don't even joke about that.
if there's a, I would say if you're Ben Johnson, this has got to be a team near the top of the list. Because either if he likes Justin Fields, he gets to keep Justin Fields, or the Carolina Panthers end up picking first, which means the Chicago Bears end up picking first. They find a way to trade Fields. I'm sure there'd be plenty of takers for him if they don't feel he's the right guy. I'm sure somebody else thinks he will be. And then they'd be able to trade him for a bunch of capital to get rid of him. And then he has his pick of quarterback to start over with. And a team that isn't really that bad. You know, they're better, you know, they're 3-7, but like with the way they played on sand, you know, small sample size. I haven't, you know, I've only seen parts of other Bears games, but like, it seems like they're a team that's kind of on the rise. They have talent there. They're on the way up. It could be a Ben Johnson destination. And I know that we don't want to, this is the reality though. We're going to have to deal with one day.
I absolutely hate it. I don't like that at all. I'd rather them just go out and hire Bill O'Brien from the Patriots staff and try and get Dennis
Erickson still alive. Maybe go there.
So let's see if they can, you know, run themselves in the ground a little bit more. Don't send Ben over there. My goodness.
Well, let's just assume they'll make bad decisions. I had to bring that up, how the Bears really
blew that game
at the end.
They did.
And the other thing, you know, we talk about long-term, the Lions issues, and, you know, we're at the stage now that, like, they're making the playoffs now. If they don't make the playoffs, it's a colossal disaster, right? Yeah. Like, they don't have an X next to their name in the standings because they're, you know, mathematically they could still fall out. You know, it's going to take a lot for them to blow a playoff spot. It's going to take a lot for them to blow the division. Their magic number is already 5. You know, and there's 7 games left. So, you know, this is uncharted territory.
Yeah, 2.5 game lead right now. So, I just don't see how that could happen. I think they're closer to getting the number one seed than they are not missing the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Too bad the Eagles won on Monday. I was rooting hard for the Chiefs on that one because the Lions would have had the tiebreaker and everything. They would have slid right into that one seed.
Well, they play the Bills this week. The Eagles do, and so that's a potential tough matchup if Josh Allen can get it going again, and you know, they got a couple more tough matches. They got to play Cowboys still as well. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah. Well, right. Exactly.
All right.
I was going to say, go ahead.
Anything else you want to add about the Bears game?
No. I think we've distracted exhausted. Ourselves quite a bit. Yes.
All right. Let's talk about the Thanksgiving spectacular that's coming on Thursday afternoon. Lions are facing off against bitter rival Green Bay Packers. I love when they were talking about during the Bears games, like, this is the third most played matchup in NFL history, you know, only behind Lions Packers and Bears Packers. Like, okay, well, you know, these are the 3 of the 5 oldest teams and they've been stuck in the same division together for, you know, 70 years. So yeah, of course they're going to play each other more than anybody else. All right, so the Lions, so obviously it's at Ford Field. It's been at Ford Field since Ford Field opened. You know, every Thanksgiving matchup, Lions are favored by 7.5, which is, you know, shocking. I mean, it's not because Green Bay's not great, but, like, you know, Lions weren't favored last year on Thanksgiving, but they were playing the Bills. They were playing a good team.
Right. When they set the over the odds you know, when the schedule first came out, the Lions were favored by 4. So they still thought the Lions had a good shot in that game. But yeah, that line has definitely increased as the season has gone on. And so I think I'm not overly surprised, but it is still very weird to look at it. What's interesting, every Thanksgiving Day game looks good, but every Thanksgiving Day game, the one team is a touchdown favorite plus over the other.
Game starts at 12:30. It's going to be on Fox. Fox number one team doing the game again. Kevin Burkhardt, Greg Olson, and Aaron Andrews. They're well aware of this Lions team. Still no referee for Thursday.
No, it came out right.
All right.
It came out right before we started. It's Carl Cheffers. Cheffers has been in the league for 24 seasons. He's been a ref for 16. You'll recognize him when you guys see him. He's been around a long time. No real drama with him. He's pretty solid. 11.6 penalties a game called, which is not quite one under the average. I think it's like 0.7 under the average or something like that. And so I think it'll go probably, you know, he'll do his best to keep his nose out of the business and kind of let him play.
Lions on a 6-game losing streak on Thanksgiving, coming into this one. So hopefully this is a good matchup for them to break that slide. I don't know. It's hard to call it a slide because it's happening once a year, like in the middle of other games. All right. DVOA rankings updated. Lions overall are 4th, 5th offensively, 10th, sunk to 10th defensively. Sticking at 14 special teams. Bears, I should say the Packers, overall 21. Yep.
Sorry.
Oh, no, that's me. Offensively 19th, defensively 24th. Special teams, 2nd from last in the league.
Yeah, their special teams has had
abysmal,
an interesting go of it recently. And I'll save why when we get to that portion of the breakdown.
So in-season moves, they traded one of their corners, Rasul Douglas, over to Buffalo already. They're currently 4-6, third place in the NFC North. They won their last game. They beat the Chargers, you know, who we beat on a last second field goal, although the Packers had them at home and handled them a little better, although the score was close at 23-20. But you know, they were in good control of that game.
So I watched the last two games of the Packers. You keep checks from a distance on the division as you go through the, you know, each of the weeks. But I went back, I watched the last two. Lots of drops by the Chargers. Like, they had so many opportunities to pull ahead in that game, and they just couldn't. They just could not get right. Their defense didn't show up. Bosa goes down and is injured, and he's headed to IR. It was just a bunch of stuff went wrong for the Chargers. And so Packers took advantage, got the win. You put on the Steelers tape the week before, and it looks like a different team. There are some things that have improved from the Packers team that we saw in week 4. But the Steelers, you know, expose some things, I think, that spots where they're vulnerable as well. For example, the Steelers just fired their offensive coordinator. Okay. They fired him because they said he wasn't creative enough and he wasn't scoring touchdowns, right? So they didn't like what he was doing. So they fired him. 2 weeks ago, the Steelers ran for 205 yards against the Packers. Okay. So this offensive coordinator that got fired was able to put up 200 plus yards rushing 2 weeks ago on the Packers. So there's flaws, right? They're kind of hit and miss there with how they perform. Showed, like I said, took advantage against the Chargers, didn't against the Steelers. And so, and those teams, I think, are both teams that are worse than the Lions. And so Lions are in a good spot. Packers got a lot of injuries on top of some of their struggles. And I think they're weak in a couple areas that the Lions are strong. And so last couple of weeks, we've seen kind of those strength on strength battles. This week, I think it's going to be almost exclusively strength on weakness on both sides of the ball.
All right. Last time the Packers and Lions faced off, the Lions won 34-20. It was Thursday night football. It was up at Lambeau Field in friendly confines. Weather wasn't bad. That was the big David Montgomery game, 3 touchdowns on the ground, 120 yards rushing. That was a big Sam Laporta game where Laporta kind of like emerged from his cocoon in that game. Let's go through the Packers roster. This is Matt LaFleur coached. Nothing too surprising. Adam Stenovich, offensive coordinator. The quarterback is the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers, although a lot of people are saying they need to get rid of him and go somebody else. Jordan Love had a fine game against the Chargers last Sunday.
I'll tell you, in week four, Jordan Love was absolutely rattled by the Lions pass rush. If you recall, they had like 17 yards passing and like 7 yards rushing or something ridiculous like that, maybe even less than that in the entire first half. He got sacked 4 times. The Lions lived in that backfield and they were pressuring him the whole time. And he was basically, he couldn't complete things short or intermediate. He only could complete things down the field. And so it was a tough performance for him, and the Lions exposed him in a lot of ways. What we've seen since then is what you would expect out of a younger quarterback in his first career start. And that is, he's slowly gotten better. And so now he's looking more comfortable in the pocket. Now he's taking shots downfield, but he's finding more success with that. Still kind of struggling in the short to intermediate, but he's much better downfield. And because of that, like, you know, if you look at like his completion percentage, it's going to be low, but he's finding more success than he did in the early parts of the season. Now, that being said, they're still like kind of middle of the road in pretty much almost all their statistics on offense. They're 20th in rush yards per yards per rush, I should say. They're 21st in rush yards per game. They are 18th in passing yards per game. They're 18th in passing yards per completion. So like, it's all kind of like middle of the road, maybe even slightly under middle of the road on offense. But when you look at the DVOA, I think it does speak to where they're a little bit stronger, because in the Packers offensive DVOA, they're 14th in the pass and 25th in the run. And I think that shows up when you watch them on tape. So Jordan Love, he's getting comfortable, and you can see that. And I think the stats are starting to kind of pan out. Is he a threat? He's not a huge threat, but he can throw, and he can throw deep. And that is a spot that the Lions have been weak at. And so he's got a real chance to put up some yards. He may have a good chance to put up some points, right? At the end of the day, though, He's still vulnerable. He's still got weaknesses, but the Packers are being smart with him. They're introducing new plays. They're introducing more gadgety type things, end arounds, quick screens, stuff like that to help him get more comfortable. Because like I said, that short to intermediate doesn't always work. So they introduce these kind of gadgety be at the line of scrimmage type plays, let him throw deep where he's finding more success. And it's shown some positive production. At the same time, I'm not terribly concerned, especially because they have injuries at running back, and that could be if they can't run the ball, and you just have to live on the arm of Love. You're going to see the Lions just kind of tee off on him, I think, just kind of like what you saw in the first one.
Speaking of injuries at running back, Lions saw Aaron Jones in the first matchup. He is doubtful for this Thursday, if not already ruled out. They also have A.J. Dillon, Emmanuel Wilson, Patrick Taylor.
So everybody's hurt, right? All like Aaron Jones isn't going to play. I almost guarantee he's not going to play. He's considered week to week. He's got an MCL injury. He didn't look good when he got hurt, and it doesn't look like he's going to get better either. On a short week, he's not practicing. I would be shocked if he played. He doesn't look like he's going to play. AJ Dillon has a groin injury. He's been limited, but he's probably going to be the guy that starts because Emmanuel Wilson, their third running back, has an injured shoulder, and he hasn't been able to practice all week either. So it's probably going to be the AJ Dillon show. And so you've got a running back with a groin injury that is your entire running game. And that is a big potential problem for them. If the Lions can get pressure on Love and they can get to him before he can uncork those deep balls, that's the method to finding success against the Packers, right? Because if you can contain Dillon, get that pressure on Love before he can uncork the deep ball, that's a recipe for success. If you let Dillon, or if you get focused too much on Dillon and you allow Love to throw deep, you're going to give up yardage. If you are too focused on Love and you don't account for Dillon, he'll run you over, even groin injury or not. So it's going to be a balance, and it could take some time, but there's a recipe here it's pretty easy to identify on how to beat him.
The wide receiver group, definitely not the most daunting group for the Lions to have faced this year. Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, who is emerging as the weeks roll on, Dontavian Wicks also improving as weeks go on, Malik Heath, Samori Toure.
So Watson has been injured. He's also the connection with him and Love hasn't really been there as like it was in previous, like it was, you know, earlier on in the season. Definitely isn't there like he had with Aaron Rodgers. But Watson is their most talented. He's dealing with the shoulder injury, but he'll probably be able to go. Doubs is healthy. Jaden Reed was added to the injury report on Tuesday. He has a chest injury. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out because he's part of their guy. He's one of these guys that is a speed option that can go deep. He can also be involved in the gadget plays. And I think Reed is an important player for them in order to do what they want to do and find success with Love. So if Reed isn't able to go, it could be a potential problem. Now, Wicks, like you said, is an emerging talent. He has a great relationship with Jordan Love. He has a concussion, though, and he hasn't practiced yet. And so he's not going to clear the concussion protocol in time, which means he's not going to play either, right? So you've got another guy that Love really relies on, like with Aaron Jones, who's probably not going to play. So you're taking two of the weapons off the board right off the bat. If Reed is hurt more than, you know, what maybe we know about, that's a huge problem. Watson and Doubs are still good, but like you said, none of them are like take over the game type guys, but they're all guys that can get deep. And if they can get deep, you know, they're going to give Love some options to, you know, find targets.
Tight end group, Luke Musgrave's been reliable, but he's also injured. They also have Tucker Kraft, Josiah DeGara, and Ben Sims.
So Musgrave was in the hospital because of his abdomen injury.
That was a lacerated kidney.
They list it as abdomen. Okay. So he hasn't practiced. And so he might not play. And if he doesn't, which it doesn't sound like he's going to play, he's another massive target. What you've seen is you've seen this connection with Love and a couple of these younger pass catchers, Musgrave being one of them. And he's losing a bunch of them. Like if he doesn't have Musgrave and he doesn't have Jones and he doesn't have Wicks, like he's going to have half of the targets that he typically relies on, if that. And so it sure looks like Musgrave's not going to play. We'll see. I've not had a lacerated kidney, but it doesn't sound like it's something that good. Right.
Especially if you're in the hospital.
Right.
And then you get released from the hospital. Say, like, all right, well, I'm going to play Thursday.
Exactly. So it doesn't sound like he's going to play. Like I said, Tucker Kraft I don't think he's played very good this season. Stats definitely don't bear it. And but they lean on him. Like they needed to lean on him when Musgrave got hurt. And so that's going to hurt them. I think that's really going to hurt them if they don't have the tight end option. It's probably going to be a lot of like three wide receiver sets, and the fullback slash tight end Degara, he's also not practiced this week. He's got a hip injury, so he's probably not going to be there, which is also going to hurt your run game. And so all of a sudden it's like they're going to have to go three wide and just try and chuck it. And if the Lions know that that's what they're going to do, they're going to send that offensive, they're going to send that defensive line and not worry so much about contain and just trying to fire off. And it'll be, has a potential to be a game that everyone missing the pass rush of over the last few weeks could potentially be very happy to see.
Lions going to deploy Brian Branch on Thursday?
However, man, they can do whatever they want with him because he lined up in the slot. He lined up outside. He lined up at linebacker. He lined up at safety all last week, right? You can put him everywhere and anywhere you want. He doesn't need to leave the field. I would blitz him. I would set him up and I would unleash him and just let him go, right? Because you're going to need to have three defensive backs, three corners, plus your two safeties. So five, you're going to be in nickel a lot. So I expect him to play a lot. And I would try and get creative with how I utilize him because he is a potential weapon.
Offensive line left to right, Rashid Walker, Elkton Jenkins, Josh Myers, John Runyon, Zach Tom. Now, this is a group that surrendered. The Beatles was five sacks in the last meeting.
And they're really weak up the middle with Josh Myers and Runyon. Runyon has had a very bad year. Myers has not played well. He lacks a lot of strength. Neither of them are very good in the run game. They're better as the in the passing pass protection. But they're vulnerable and it could be a problem. Their left tackle is an issue ever since Bakhtiari went onto injured reserve. Their best offensive lineman is their right tackle, Zach Tom. So it'll be interesting to see if they put Aiden over Zach Tom and just try and get best on best and allow your other guys to have weaker advantages, or if you want to flip Aiden over onto that left tackle side and try and take advantage of a weaker matchup. I think it's going to be probably a mix of both. That's typically what they try and do, but there's some opportunities to play a little matchup with this line. Lee McNeil you need him to show up. And again, you have that opportunity to put him on Jenkins and go strength on strength, or you could try and set him up against Runyon Myers and see if he can take advantage.
All right. So players having sacks against the Packers first go around: Isaiah Bugs, Lee McNeil, John Kaminsky, Charles Harris had a half sack. Aiden Hutchinson, 1.5 sacks, but he did not secure a safety or punt a ball into the crowd in that game. At least I don't know from what I can remember. Maybe he was doing it off camera. All right. Flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. Defense is coordinated by Joe Barry, who's bad defensive coordinator, was once famously brought up in a meeting with Rod Marinelli because he was the defensive coordinator for the Lions in the 0-16 season. He also happened to be Rod Marinelli's son-in-law. Rob Parker, many of you listening know who he is, but he was a local guy, local media member for a long time. Now he does like national stuff out of LA, but he asked the question of Rod, do you wish your daughter married a better defensive coordinator? And he took a lot of heat for that. And I guess rightfully so. Nowadays it'd be no big deal asking a question like that. Now that what the world has turned into today. I don't think it was that unfair of a question at the same time.
Well,
now, you were an actual media member. So, you know, that's not proper what he asked.
Yes. Dan Campbell had a lot of positive things to say about Joe Barry.
Well, of course. He's not going to say, oh, I think he's terrible. And, his wife should have married a better defensive coordinator. But he's not going to say that stuff.
But I think when you look at like the numbers are potentially problematic. And I think this is really, while the offense is missing some of their key guys due to injury, the defense is also missing several key guys and potentially have other guys banged up as well due to injury. So they're at the bottom of the league in run defense. Their pass defense is all banged up. And so they're very vulnerable in the secondary because of injury. And like I said, they've given up a lot on the ground. The big thing when you watch them is they can't hold their gaps to save their life, right? And so if the Lions run their gap scheme, they should just muscle the crap out of them, right? Like they lack anchor. TJ, we'll get to the guys in a second, but they lack anchor. They don't get a whole lot of push, and they give up massive holes in the A and B gaps. And so there's a lot of speed on defense. And especially in that front. And so if you try and go laterally, if you try screens, if you try outside zones, those are harder to come by. You're not going to find as much success. But if you just try and power run right in the gaps, there's yardage to be had. And so this is going to be very much a running opportunity, in my opinion. And I think both backs for the Lions will continue to have really good chances to continue what they've done over the last couple of weeks, and they can run it straight up the middle. They can get creative with how they use their backs. But if the Lions have a real good opportunity to control the line of scrimmage when they're on offense. And I think that's a huge catalyst in them, you know, being able to put up points.
All right, Packers defensively, front line and edge rushers, Kenny Clark and TJ Slayton with Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, and the rush end position, you know, edge defenders.
Right.
You'll see a little bit of Devontae Wyatt. We'll see some Colby Wooden. We'll see Carl Brooks.
Yeah, basically they run a 4-2. So Preston Smith and Gary are on the field the majority of the time at their edge spots. And that leaves two interior spots, and Clark and Slayton are their guys. Slayton is their big nose tackle, but he can get pushed around. He's not as big of an anchor as I think they want him to be. Wyatt is a good defensive tackle, but he's not as strong. He's more of a penetrator. And so he can get pushed around. And right now Clark is good, but you can double Clark and then single up whoever's next to him. And then the gaps are huge. And so that's really what teams have been doing. I don't think Carl Brooks is the answer for them right now. He's too young, in my opinion. So is Wooden. They're both rookies. And so it's going to take some time for them to get going in their acclimation. You also have rookies and second year guys on the edge as their reserve edge defenders behind, they spent a first round pick on Lucas Van Ness. I don't think he's quite turned the corner as fast as they thought he might. Ingbare is pretty good, but he's hit and miss. And again, I don't think either Van Ness or Ingbare are really the priorities. They're more just like they're subbing in when Gary or Preston Smith need a breather. But you can run away from Rashawn Gary and be fine. You know what I mean? Like you can run right up the middle and eliminate some of the penetration the edge rushers can get to. And so Gary's the guy to worry about. Kenny Clark has historically been a terrific player. He's older, and I think he's probably past his prime, but he's still fantastic, in my opinion. He's probably on the downside of his career, but he's still, like I said, still a guy you have to pay attention to. I would double him and then, like I said, single up your other guy, interior guy. And then you got to get your tackles against their edge guys. And if you do, those are the fun battles to watch. And I think the Lions are in a spot where they can take advantage. So big opportunity. The Packers can get home when you give them time. And you know, the Lions offensive line has been really good at giving Jared Goff a lot of time. But if Goff holds on to the ball, the Packers can get home on him. And so he'll have to be smart with his decision-making. They establish the run. Then that's going to back off their pass rush and gives Goff more time. And then, the offense will start cooking then.
All right, second-level linebackers, off-the-ball linebackers for the Packers, Quay Walker and Devontre Campbell, Isaiah McDuffie, Eric Wilson, Christian Welch off the bench.
So Campbell, who's their all-pro, has a neck injury, and he has not practiced all week. And so there's a really good chance that Campbell isn't going to play in this game. McDuffie is his backup, and McDuffie looks like a safety. He's maybe even not as big as a safety. He looks kind of like a nickel. He is not big. And so they really don't have a clean number two off the ball guy to pair with Quay Walker if Campbell's not available. And it sure looks like Campbell's not going to be available. That's also going to kill their ability to stop the run, right? Because if you're shooting those A and B gaps and they've only got Quay Walker there, well, you've seen how the Lions run those combo blocks. You can run combo blocks right on Quay and then put Isaiah McDuffie on, whoever your back is. And that's a nightmare scenario for them because Montgomery can run them over and Gibbs can make them look silly. So big opportunity here, right up the gut. That's the way you have to attack this Packers front seven. And I think that suits right into what the Lions want to do and what they're really good at.
Devontre Campbell did not play against the Lions in the first game either. Quay Walker racked up 19 tackles in the game.
Yeah.
Moving to the defensive secondary, cornerbacks include Jair Alexander, Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, Corey Ballantyne. Those are the guys that get the starts and a lot of the playing time. Robert Rochelle and Q Blue Kelly are other guys available.
So let's stick with the first four you talked about. Nixon is their slot. So he's on the field almost all the time because they play a ton of nickel, 85%, 90%, 100% of the time, sometimes nickel. So Nixon is going to be the guy that's been tasked with slowing down St. Brown, which is a scenario that's not ideal. Alexander is one of the better corners in the league. The problem is he's been hurt a ton. He has missed the last 2 weeks with a shoulder injury. And while he has been listed as limited, keep in mind, these are walkthroughs. So he hasn't actually practiced like in an actual practice in 3 weeks. And so I don't know if he's going to play. And if he does, one, I don't know how rusty he's going to be or how much he's going to need breaks or if he'd be able to play all the snaps. Like, it's a big question mark around him. The fact that it's a short week for him is not good. That's a bad situation for them. If this was the Lions, he wouldn't play because the Lions wouldn't, be without letting him practice. They just wouldn't play him. So we'll see what the Packers do with him. But 2 weeks of not practicing, plus this one being the third, that's a long stretch of time to miss to be able to just step back on the field and think you're going to be ready to go. So opposite him is Carrington Valentine. Valentine is really stiff and really hyper-focused, and I don't think he's a terrific starter, but he's the guy who's had to start with Rasul Douglas. When Rasul Douglas got traded, Valentine is the guy that they called on. I think he's vulnerable. I think you can take advantage of him. You can beat him with a variety of different things, and the Lions should be able to match up well. So if Alexander can't play, that's when they go to Ballantyne with a B, and Ballantyne is going to be asked to start. Now, he's shown well, pretty well, to the point where I do wonder if they would consider starting him, Ballantyne, over Valentine, because I think he's played better. Yeah, no kidding, right? A lot hinges on Alexander. And so even if he plays, I think they're vulnerable. If they go with the guys that they have been starting, I think they're vulnerable. It's not a great situation for them with what they have. And that trading of Douglas has really come back to bite them, because Douglas was an important guy for what they were doing. And it always seems to happen like this, right? Like you trade a guy away and then all of a sudden everyone in that position group gets injured. And so Nixon's actually been injured too. I think Nixon's dealing with a, let me double check it. Yeah, they
have a list that's questionable.
Yeah, he's an ankle. He has an ankle injury. So he'll probably play. He played last week, like almost the whole game. And so I don't have anything to speculate on that says he won't play. But if you're limited and you're tasked in covering St. Brown, it's going to be a hard road for you. So the corners, they got a tough row right in front of them, especially with the injuries.
Safeties, Jonathan Owens and Rudy Ford. Rudy Ford had the interception in the first matchup. Anthony Johnson, Zane Anderson coming off the bench.
And Darnell Savage was their starter previously. He's been on IR. Now, he has returned to practice, but just like with Jair, he hasn't practiced in weeks. And so they're not actually, and because they're not practicing this week, how much can you really evaluate him enough to pull him off of IR and throw him in the lineup and ask him to play? And if you do, how do you trust him? And will he be ready to go? So I don't, my guess, again, if this was the Lions, they would not pull him off of the, even though they're quote unquote practicing him, they would not pull him off. If the Packers, you know, think that he's their best option, then they just may, especially because Rudy Ford didn't play last game or didn't play last week. The guy who had the interception against the Lions. So he didn't play last week. He's been limited this week with a calf injury. I'm sorry, with a bicep injury. And so he's been a little bit vulnerable. Opposite him has been Owens, who has been starting in the place of Savage. And Owens he's been, you know, taken advantage of as well. He's not a great cover safety. He's more of like a box safety. And so when they run their two high shell, he's vulnerable. When they run their single high shell, then that puts their corners in a spot. And again, with the injuries there, then they're vulnerable. And so it's not an ideal situation in their secondary right now with how they match up against the Lions. So again, just like up front, where they're weak, the Lions are really good at that A gap, you know, B gap running with the gap scheme. This is another scenario where I don't think they match up very well against the Lions passing offense. And there's opportunities for them to carve them up over the middle with St. Brown. There's opportunities for them to push it deep with Jameson Williams. And so again, playing into the Lions' strengths, this is another strength on weakness type of game. So, or type of matchup. So lots of advantages for the Lions in this matchup. The defense has shown better. And I think when you look at their numbers, they're not terrible, but they're on the lower half of the league in their production. They're in the lower half of the league in their DVOA. And that's for a reason. You know, they don't get a lot of turnovers. They don't stop the run very well. And so, you know, one of the reasons why they're average against the pass is because teams run on them. And now with the injuries, it makes them even more vulnerable against the pass. So this is a matchup where the Lions could score some points, in my opinion. And it's just because the matchups are just really highly favorable for Detroit.
All right, going to the special teams group, pair of rookies kicking and punting. Kicker Anders Carlson is making 82% of his field goals. He's made every one of them inside of 40 yards, but once he hasn't made one between 40 and 50, but he has nailed 2 out of 3 over 50 yards. Half his kickoffs go for touchbacks, so kind of run-of-the-mill stats.
So he, against the Raiders, the Steelers, kicked the kickoff out of bounds and had an extra point blocked. So not great. and he had a second kickoff that almost went out of bounds. So I've seen the games that I've watched with him, because I watched the Packers-Raiders game earlier in the year when I was scouting the Raiders as well, and he
that
missed
was Carlson on Carlson.
Yeah,
that Raiders
the Packers Carlson missed one in that game too. So, I would say he's still learning, right? Like, I think there are things that he needs to do, and he's coming off a couple of games, last two games, haven't been his best. And so, you know, they got to be hoping that he's, you know, turns it around, because a couple of like just silly mistakes, like taking too long to convert the extra point, kicking the ball, angling the ball, and then having it just take it wasn't even like a bad bounce. Like, it just bounced and he just kicked it right on the sideline and just went out. Like, it was like stuff you don't normally see, right? Like that stuff you used to see a decade ago but nowadays the way the kickers are, the way the focus is on special teams and the kickoffs and with all the new rule changes and stuff like that, you don't see it that often. That kickers just shank it out of bounds, and he did it. So he almost did it twice. And so, yeah, I think the Lions will have an advantage on kickoffs and then in the kicking game.
The rookie punters fared a bit better. Daniel Whelan averaging 47.6 yards per kick. None of them blocked. Quarter of them inside the 20.
Yeah, he's good. I actually think he's a good punter. I think they got something there. I just think the other aspects outside of punting are problematic for them right now. That's why they're ranked 31st, right? I mean,
in the return game, Keyshawn Nixon returns kicks. And then Keyshawn Nixon and Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed is a good punt returner from his college days. It's broken one for 35 yards, but nothing for a touchdown yet. You'll see either one of them returning punts.
Yeah, Nixon tries to return everything, right? And I think because he tries to return everything, I believe he leads the NFL in kick return yardage. Because if you kick it in the end zone, he'll try and run it out. If you kick it short, he'll try and run it out. Like, he just and he breaks a couple. Like, he breaks a couple every once in a while. Like, he broke one against Pittsburgh. But and then I think he had a return for a touchdown against the Raiders, if I'm not mistaken. And so he can go. He just tries to go all the time. And a lot of the times he isn't breaking them, or he's coming up short and putting them in bad spots. And so potential, he's got the potential to house them, but at the same time, I expect the Lions to just kick away from them and, you know, call it a day.
I was going to say, you know, if you're the Packers, you're going to want them to return every kick, because why not?
Yeah.
If you're short all these guys on offense, you know what, to try to bust some the good field position. That could be the one thing that works in your favor.
Yeah, you start at the 50. It's a lot easier for Jordan Love, for sure.
Long snappers, Matt Orzech. I don't know if you have any details on him.
I do not.
All right, that's it. That's the Thanksgiving Day version of the Green Bay Packers.
It's a Packers team that, in my opinion, is good. And they have some really good spots, but they don't match up well against the Lions, in my opinion. And I think it's a good opportunity for the Lions to get back on track after a bad game against Chicago, and a good opportunity for them to break that losing streak on Thanksgiving. So excited for this one. I think it could be fun for the home crowd.
All right. Now we got to talk about the score.
Well, here's the great thing. You got back in the win column this week, because you nailed the Lions at 31. You had 31 points for the Lions. They got 31. And you were just a few points off on the Bears. So you beat me by a handful of points, which means you get the honors of going first. We're 6-4. I have 6. You have 4 on the season. So the honors go to you for this one, and I'll let you go first.
All right. So I mentioned earlier in the show, the Lions have lost 6 straight on Thanksgiving Day, but the last time they faced the Packers on Thanksgiving was 10 years ago in 2013, where they won 40-10. So I don't know. I don't think it'll be 40-10, but I'm going to give the Lions the win. I'm going to say I'm going to stick with Lions at 31. That's their lucky number with me. Lions 31, Packers 20.
Okay. Well, I am. It's pretty good. That's close to where I'm at. That's really close to where I was at too. like exactly where I was at.
Oh, and so well, I know we can make it a push.
I'm trying to see if I want to go up or over, or if I want to go, if I want to keep them lower or if I want to keep them higher. I will go 31. I'll take 19 then. Ooh. So I'll go 31-19. So I think the Lions will. Well, you said 31-20, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I had 31 as well. But I'll take 19. So I'm going to say they hold the Packers under. So Packers go over, you get the win. Packers go under, I get the win. In my prediction, though, with Pride of Detroit, I'm going to go with 31-20 because that's what I had. That's good. That's good. The fact that we're that close to one another, I think is it's a good sign. I think.
The later we get in the year, the better honed in you get on the team and what they're capable of. Watch, well, we're both like horribly wrong. The score is going to be really wacky. Some other it'll be like 44-38 or something. It'll be some wild score.
I could see the Lions putting up
7-6.
No, I definitely think
Lions should be able to score.
I have a hard time. I have a hard time predicting that they're going to score more than four touchdowns. At the same time, I think four touchdowns is absolutely in reach. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can't really predict five touchdowns and be like, yeah, you know, give confidence in that. So, game. Right. So
it'll happen, but it won't happen all the time.
Yeah. So I do like them to score a handful of times. Like four times seems like the Packers don't give up a lot of touchdowns. At the same time, I don't see the Lions like having to settle either. So I like the scores we're at.
All right. Ratings, Apple Podcasts. Got a great rating, the 5-star update from Shelly Chalker.
Nice.
Very nice words. And that, then also Spotify, we boosted up a couple ratings there. So hey, keep those ratings coming in. We appreciate them.
That's great.
Appreciate everybody listening. Eric, do you have anything to add for Thursday's game?
If you're going to the game, keep in mind all of the chaos that's happening down in Detroit. On Turkey Thursday morning
parade,
right? And so there's lots of traffic, there's lots of road closures, there's a lot of pedestrians no matter what time you go, but if you go downtown, like, you know, be cautious, take a quick glance at the map, because you know, Woodward is going to be closed at certain times during the day. Then there's going to be roads around Woodward that are closed at certain points. But, you know, it's like a rotating closure type of thing. So it gets a little tricky down there on Thanksgiving. Leave early, take your time, and get there early, visit some tailgating, and enjoy and have a great time. Should be a fun day.
Not supposed to rain, right? Just supposed to be cold.
You know what? I haven't checked. I didn't. I can check on my phone real fast.
I guess
just double check.
This is since neither of you will be spending any time outside down there.
It does not show rain. Yeah, yep. It doesn't. Just shows. Cold. But you know, when you're down there in the morning, it's going to be cold for sure. Get better in the when you by the time you're leaving, it'll be nicer. But it'll be cold in the morning, so dress appropriately. And you know, have a warm beverage,
or a cold beverage, or two,
whatever warms you up.
Yeah, whatever does it for you. All right, that's it. That's all we got. Everybody, have a happy Thanksgiving out there. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy your family. Everybody's listening outside the country. You know, take it enjoying our Thanksgiving for Thursday. Although I'm sure there's some people out there who listen to us or in, you know, outside of the country who have to work Thursday and will miss the game, you know, at some level. It'd be timing wise, it'll probably be in their evening if you're in Europe or whatever. It'll be late at night the next day. Well, it'll be late at night if you're in Asia or whatever, but go ahead, Derek. Sorry.
No, I was going to say this is a unique week because of the fact that they have three games on Thursday, one game on Black Friday, which is the first time they've ever held one on Friday. And then they Saturday will be all college, and then Sunday they'll have a whole bunch of games, and then they'll have the Monday game, Sunday night game, Monday game as well. So four professional NFL, you know, days of football over a 5-day period, and then that fifth day, that college day that's in there, is going to be a whole bunch of rivalry. So five intense days of football on the docket. Should be lots of fun for no matter where you are.
Right. Oh yeah. All right, that's it. That's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.